An appropriation from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund helps KEXE produce Phonology Plus with John Latimer. The fund supports cultural and history programs on 91.7 KEXE.
It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And our climate has taken a little swing to the north, if you get my drift. But I won't say not unexpected. not without precedent. We have had plenty of snowfall in April over the past years. And I hate to break it to you, but we'll have... We may not have this year, we may not have snow in May, but it's certainly, again, not without precedent. So I guess all you can do is bear up. It's, I guess the only decent thing you can say about it is that usually at the end of a week it's gone, and we'll see. Friday is coming, and hopefully by Saturday morning we'll be not looking at all this snow again. It'll be somewhere else, or in the ground, or someplace. I wanted to catch up on a couple of emails, and the first one comes from Chris, who says, I'm from the southeast corner of Hibbing. I live out towards the Sac Zim Bog. Anyhow, I finally figured out how to email you my reports. I love wildlife and bird watching, so I really would like to share with you. On Tuesday the 5th, I heard a grouse drumming for the first time this year. We also saw two northern harriers in the field near our home in the evening. We also saw at least 25 deer within a two-mile area. On the 6th, I heard my first robin. On the 7th, I saw a killdeer in Virginia. I also saw my first male robin and red-winged blackbird in our yard. In the evening, after we got home from work, we saw a male grouse displaying for a female. She was on top of our picnic table. What a treat. We have never seen that before. Then on the 8th, we saw turkey vultures flying. In the evening, we thought we heard sandhill cranes. We've been seeing lots of juncos and still some chickadees. We have at least four rabbits that frequent our yard, and the deer come up every evening in our backyard to eat the bird seed. I also heard my first woodcock on the 16th. We really enjoy your programs on Tuesdays. Thank you so much. Chris W. Thank you, Chris, and keep them coming. Now that you're now that you figured out how to do it, why, don't let us down. We'll be waiting to hear from you and what's going on in your neighborhood. And if any of the rest of you have emails you'd like to send along or notes you'd like to pass along to us, please. We are always encouraging that to happen. And from two of our favorite young ladies in the Dixon Lake area, Gracie and Sophie, they were out exploring, as always, and the Third River exceeded the high water stages that were present last fall. Newly arrived blue-winged teal, widgeon, and ring-neck ducks. Some golden eyes are already incubating egg clutches in nest boxes, and the wood frogs were heard to start singing. Sophie went canoeing around the remaining skim ice on Dixon Lake, and some winter-killed fish were observed. Many bald eagles were feeding on these fish. Third River water temperature was 40 degrees last night. Ooh, not exactly swimming temperature yet. And finally, and most importantly, I think, Sophie just returned from the Minnesota River bottoms where she was turkey hunting, and she shot her first turkey, an 18-pound trophy Jake gobbler. Congratulations, Sophie. I hope my luck runs as good as yours. I'm going down at the end of the month, and I'll be out there sitting quietly in the woods and marveling at all the things that go on. You know, turkey hunting is more than, I think, the bagging of the bird, which is always kind of exciting, but there are so many things to watch and to listen to. I've just been astounded down there every year, from one year when it was flocks of indigo buntings to another year when it was the singing of the brown thrashers. Another year, flocks and flocks of some sort of shorebirds flying by and singing. blue jays hiding corn practically at my feet. There's always something to watch when you're out turkey hunting. Anytime you can go out and sit quietly in the woods, there's definitely something to see. And in the past week, some of the things that I've observed, well, I too heard the singing of frogs. I did not hear the wood frogs. I heard spring peepers and what are now known as boreal chorus frogs. I guess chorus frogs will work. For a long time, they were called western chorus frogs. And now I think their official name is boreal chorus frogs. But anyway, these little frogs sound as though they're running their thumbs down a comb. And the spring peepers, of course, are eponymously named. They simply make that peeping noise. The wood frog sounds a bit like a duck, kind of a quack, quacking noise, or a quack, 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 quack. So I suspect that the next time the temperature climbs above 50, we'll probably hear the frogs again. Right now, they're pretty quiet. Not much action when it's this cold. I saw my first broad-winged hawk last week on the 12th, which was last Tuesday, and that is the earliest sighting I've ever had for a broad-winged hawk. Now, the temperature climbed almost, I think I had unofficially at my house, I had 68 degrees last week on the 12th, and I know that some people talked about getting into the 70s last week on the 12th, but this particular little fellow flew right over me, and I got a really good look at that tail of his, and that's what always tips me off to broad-winged hawks, because it is a definite black-white banding across the tail. You can't miss it. Really stands out. We mentioned that great blue herons were back. On the 14th, Thursday, my lake, it isn't my lake, the lake I live on, Crooked Lake, was open. And that, it's almost average for that lake. I suspect it was the strong winds that opened it up. April 13th is the average date. Last year, let's see, March 31st, must have been warm last year. The two previous years before that, 2009 and 2008, April 22nd and April 25th. So you see that we've had some cold springs over the years, but it's certainly spectacular to have that open water out there again and be able to kind of go down there and look at that beautiful, beautiful glistening water with the sun sparkling off the waves. It's just really, really nice. And of course, since the lake opened up, we have now loons out there. I heard my first loons this past week. Looking at the box elder and the sometimes called ash-leafed maple, it is it's starting to break open. The buds are just starting to split. Now, I was looking at some of the Twitter accounts that I follow, and my friends down in West Virginia were saying that the box elders were quite open already, and I guess that makes sense. But up here, the buds are just starting to split. If you're looking for action in the trees or in the bushes, down low where you can see them, the catkins on the speckled alders are fully distended for the most part, although there are still some that haven't gotten there yet, and I guess that's all right. There are always the early ones, and then there are the average ones, which we're probably striking at right now, and then there are the ones that come a little bit later on, and they are still pretty short and tight. But the speckled alder catkins are quite, for the most part, are probably at their peak of distension right now, and peak of pollen is probably happening right now as we're talking. The female flowers, if you're interested, look at the speckled alders. By the way, they always grow down near water. They're always close to swamps, the speckled alders. They have gray bark with white lenticels. These are little openings, kind of horizontal openings in the bark itself, and the The catkins are long, probably, six to seven centimeters long. And the female flowers are usually just above the big male catkins, and they're very small, probably, two, maybe 3 millimeters. And they're bright red right now because the stigmas are exposed and looking for that windborne pollen to fall on them. Same is true of the American hazel and some of the beaked hazel. The flowers are out right now, the female flowers. If you have hazel brush in your yard, go out and take a very, very close look. And you have to look carefully because these flowers are less than about an eighth of an inch long. They're very small, I would say 2 millimeters. So very, very small red flowers on the hazel brush right now. And the male flowers, the catkins, are starting to stretch. I've got some on my mail route that really get long, and they're probably, on the order of maybe 3 to 4 centimeters. So they're an inch to an inch and a half long, a little bit longer than that maybe close to 2 inches. The birds, after that snow, my. They were, twice or three times on Saturday, I came upon flocks of robins, 50 or more birds, standing on the highway, up on 60, County Road 60, County Road 49, and County Road 59. All of those highways had great flocks of these robins standing around looking for whatever, worms, I suppose, that were crazy enough to crawl out on the road. There were also lots of hermit thrushes mixed in with those flocks of juncos that were around, flocks of juncos with hermit thrushes and fox sparrows, eastern phoebes. I saw a couple of those this past week, and I've been watching my common ravens. The ravens have really gotten quiet. They are just hardly making any noise at all anymore, and I suspect that they have young in their nests, because usually when the young are not fledged, but when they're hatched out and they're being fed by the parents get real quiet, and the babies don't make a sound. You won't hear them until they're almost ready to fledge, and then they'll get quite wild. I probably have mentioned before that I try to pick up roadkill on my route and bring it home to the ravens. And now the ravens are getting a little bit habituated, because it seems like every night when I get home from work, I park in my driveway, and just as I get out of my car, the raven flies over the house, and I'm assuming it's the male. He flies over the house quite low. He looks down at me, and he makes a few little grunting noises, like, did you bring us anything? What'd you bring me? Anyway, it's quite humorous, and he and I are having a nice relationship. I hope that one of you gets lucky and hits something on the road today so I can feed the ravens when I get home tonight. Oh, my. I mentioned the common loon on Crooked Lake, and the northern flickers are back. Saw a few of those this past week. Red elderberries are open. It's pretty amazing how these red elderberries, well, any of these living plants that are opening up now, that are beginning to bud out. They sort of bud out, and then all of a sudden they just go into stasis. They just stop. They don't develop any further until things warm up again. They just kind of hold when it's cold. And you can see on the red elderberry, you can see the first little beginnings of some leaves coming out, and you can actually see some of the flower buds underneath, and they're starting to develop a little bit. So if you look at the red elderberry, you'll see some stuff going on there that is a hopeful harbinger of spring. Finally, I mentioned hermit thrushes, and the final note, I guess, would be that the sugar maples. I don't know if you're a sap gatherer or not, but in the last, since Saturday when the weather turned kind of foul there and got snowy and cold, the sugar maples really began to kick out the sap. Some people have been working overtime just to keep up with all the sap that's coming out. You know, it looked at first, like last Tuesday when we talked, it looked like the season was about over because it was very warm, and the trees had kind of ceased to really pump sap. But then things turned cold, and now we're having perfect weather for sap gathering, 40s in the day and 20s at night. It doesn't get much better than that. And so there's a good number of people out there who are still gathering sap and making syrup. And good luck to you. We are waiting to hear or to taste your wares. That's the Phenology Show for today. Thanks for tuning in. As always, if you have observations, comments, or questions, please send them along. It's time for TalkBack. TalkBack is your opportunity to communicate with us. Maybe you've got a question you'd like to ask, a comment you'd like to make, or an observation you'd like to share. It doesn't matter. We're anxious to hear from you, and you can get in touch with us by calling our TalkBack line. That number is 999-9876. You can also reach us by sending emails to comments@kaxe.org, or you can send them to me personally by sending them to jlatimer@kaxe.org. And you can always reach us by mail. Our address is 260 Northeast 2nd Street, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, 55744. I'd like to start off today with a plea, I guess. I've been actively trying to encourage people to take a picture of a red maple tree in their yard. If you can hear me, if you get this on internet, however you get this message, if you get a chance today, walk outside, find a red maple in your yard, and take a picture of it. Take a picture of the whole tree, and then take a close-up picture of the buds, and send that to me, John Latimer, at jlatimer@kaxe.org. We're hoping to get a series of pictures from around the country, actually from around Minnesota anyway, and have a look and see how the trees, how the red maples are developing on this, the 19th day of April. So if you get a chance and you feel the urge, take your camera outside, take a picture of the red maple in your yard, and oh, don't forget to tell me where you live, because that'll be important too. We did hear from a number of you this past week, including Doug, who called from Grand Rapids.
Last night, 4:11, I heard my first frogs in the swamp across the street from us, southeast Grand Rapids. And this morning I had anthills in my driveway. And you know, it looks like the Creeping Charlie wintered well. It's coming up fine. Thank you.
You know, Doug, I wasn't worried about my Creeping Charlie, but now that you mention it, it's bright green and looking good. I think my Creeping Charlie's going to survive the winter as well. No winter kill there. I don't know what kind of a winter it would take to kill Creeping Charlie. I don't think it would. It's probably not one that humans would survive. And the anthills on the driveway, I hadn't noticed yet. Those are probably those little Lasius neonigers, those little red ants, sugar ants, I guess we used to call them. And they make those little volcanic-looking anthills. And I'm surprised, I guess. I haven't been looking for them yet. So, and I haven't seen any in my driveway, now that I think back on it. But we'll have to be watching out for those. So, and the frogs, oh my. You know, I'm always so anxious for the frogs to sing. And you're right, back on the 11th and the 12th, why, they really cut loose and began to sing, and it was quite nice to hear that chorus again. And they seemed to be going at it pretty good. And then it just kind of died away. But we will definitely be hearing them again very soon, I have no doubt. I got a couple of notes here about maple syrup and maple sap gathering. And Egon starts off by saying this past little short spell of winter weather since last Saturday has really cranked up the sap run again. He said that he was collecting quite a bit of sap in the last couple of days, and it seems to be continuing right on. Leatherwood buds are swollen but not yet open. The female aspen flowers are starting to open up and become receptive. And once that happens, the males will really start to put out the pollen. I think if you watch the male catkins, which are the easy ones to see right now, they're quite big. And they'll get longer and longer. And pretty soon, with the right light, if the sun is low in the sky, either in the morning or the evening, you'll see these aspens that appear to be just kind of cloudy, sort of a gray smudge. And those are probably males with their catkins fully distended. They're really getting there, so keep an eye out on those as well. This note comes from our good friend Joel down in Park Lake, and he said, it's Tuesday morning the 19th, shortly after midnight. I've just taken off a batch of syrup. Sap run on the last 5 days is definitely the peak of the season. About half a dozen 2-gallon buckets were overflowing on special collections. Thursday through Saturday runs were just a few hours because the temperature was below freezing almost all day, but heavy flow when it thawed. Sunday and Monday we got longer runs with good flow rates, and it looks like we'll have several more good days before the season goes south. Actually, probably going to go north, but I get the expression. Wood frogs and peepers have been calling despite the nights that have been falling below freezing around sunset. Monday, I heard the first loon back on Park Lake. Our big flock of male red-winged blackbirds finally showed up on Friday, and they're making quite a racket in the yard. Between them and the juncos, which were also numerous, sunflower seed consumption has tripled in the past week. Park Lake has a slice of open water since the weekend. If the wind blows strong off Lake Superior, the ice just might go out today or tomorrow, even with the unseasonably cool weather. I should be able to file a final sap report before next week's phenology show. Thanks, Joel. When I figure out how to do this, I will put a couple of pictures of a timber wolf that Kathy Holbein got caught on her trail cam, one in the evening, one in the early morning, and one early morning like 2:40 in the morning, and then another one around 6:30 in the morning. And so the wolf is very visible in both pictures. Dave Lick sent me a note, said he was skiing on South Sumi on the 16th of April, the latest that he can remember doing it, and saw an otter over on Lawrence Lake. Courtney reports feeding hermit thrushes. She said that after that snowfall, they were looking pretty forlorn. She got out some raspberries that she'd picked last summer, and she put them out in her yard. And the first day, they just ignored them, but by the second day, caution was thrown to the wind, and she was able to have the hermit thrushes come and feed from her piles of raspberries. Mr. Sipper's fifth grade class at the Cuyuna Range Elementary School in Deerwood sent along a report. Jamie and Corbin are our reporters.
For reptiles, we saw a wood frog, a leopard frog, and a snapping turtle on the 12th, and a boreal chorus frog on the 8th. For insects, we saw a centipede on the 6th, a sweat bee on the 9th, and a bumblebee on the 12th. For plants, we saw a hepaticma emerging.
Our highest temperature this week was 67 degrees Fahrenheit on the 12th, and the lowest was 24 degrees Fahrenheit on the 5th.
For birds, we saw a killdeer and osprey on the 5th, a red-winged blackbird on the 2nd, bluebirds on the 3rd, wild turkeys on the 4th, spring peeper on the 12th, and increasing numbers of killdeer.
Other observations were bears on the 3rd, timberwolves on the 9th, and wolf pups on the 3rd.
Thank you. That was a great report. Lots of good things in there, and I'm not surprised. Let's see, wolf pups. This would be toward the end of April. If they bred in mid-February, it'd be mid-March, mid-April, so it's entirely possible that the wolf pups are out and about. I would expect they'd be pretty close to the den, though. They'd be pretty small this time of year. If you saw them at all, they would be just little fur balls, not too big, probably, you know, like 2 or 3 pounds, maybe the size of a cat right now. They will certainly be growing very rapidly in the next few weeks, though. And a bumblebee on the 12th, you know, the bumblebees, the queens, the rest of the hive dies, but the queens go out and they go in the leaf litter and they fasten their mouth parts onto a leaf and they hang down from that leaf in the leaf litter and they spend the winter sort of frozen. And then they thaw out about this time of year and they get out and they start looking for food. And the first food that they're likely to find is probably the pollen on the pussy willows. So they'll be hanging out around pussy willows looking for things to eat. Ed Dallas called from Deerwood this morning. He said on the 12th he had tree swallows, catnip was up, leeks were up, cascade, the ice went out on the 12th. On the 13th, he saw his first yellow-bellied sapsucker and a kingfisher. On the 14th, there were loons back on Cascade Lake. On the 16th, goldfinch showed up, and it was quite yellow. And there's a question for you. Ed wondered if it was, if as a sap gatherer, as a syruper, do you plug your tap holes when you pull your spiles out of the trees, or do you just leave the holes open and let the tree close them themselves? If you know the answer to that, or if there are varying answers to that, why, let me know. I'd like to hear from you to know what's going on there. Steve Wilson from up in Finland, Minnesota, said that the speckled alders are yielding pollen on the 11th, and he saw his first yellow-rumped warbler. Cowslips are blooming in Derbyshire, England, and elms are blooming and tamaracks are greening up in West Virginia, even as we speak. And our final report this week, let's see, we heard from Sam Guida, and he said the bald eagles are definitely nesting in the nest on 371 by Nisswa. All you see is the white head of the sitting adult. On the 12th, Guida Lake opened a third by late afternoon with a high of 71 degrees. On the 13th, loons were back on Guida Lake. Some ducks and geese were there also. Hepatica plants with unopened flower buds by a big oak tree in my dad's mail route. It's the first one to bloom every year. That was on the 15th, so there's a bud up on the hepatica plant down there. Sort of confirms what the kids were reporting from the Cuyuna Range Elementary School. On the 16th, 3 inches of snow. We shoveled for the juncos. We have tons of them. Also, hermit thrushes were feeding with the juncos and calling. Yellow-rumped warblers, olive-colored warbler-sized bird on a maple tree licking the sap. I don't know what this was and could not identify from the bird book, but I only got one look at it. And, you know, Sam, that's so typical. As we learn our birds, we oftentimes get these quick glimpses of a bird and we end up with nothing. We end up with just scratching our heads. Snow geese, great blue herons, lots of water birds, ducks, mergansers, etc. Speckled alder catkins will puff pollen if flicked. Elderberry leaf buds are opening. On the 17th, turkey vultures, also our first calf, was born. There were some bird songs in the woods around the house that have a witchety type song, but have not seen them. Not sure what this is yet. I did hear one pileated in the woods last week while I was wondering if both were killed by a predator. We know one was gone for sure. Cormorants on the Mississippi by the paper mill. On the 18th, my mom saw a flock of birds flying over the river in Pine River. They were flying in circles. It was very interesting and odd. Maybe swifts or swallows. Some snow flurries again today. Elderberry has tiny leaves about 1 inch long, including the stem, and they are not fully open. That from our good friend Sam Guida down in Nisswa. And finally this week, our last call comes from our friend Ruth, who called with these notes.
On the 14th of April, I saw my first seagull, and shortly thereafter, I saw a ton more seagulls arriving in Grand Rapids. And over the weekend, I had tons of juncos in my yard. And as I was listening to the radio this morning, I was reminded about all of the fox sparrows that were with them. But the big thing is that this morning on the 18th, I was driving down Forest Street Southwest, and there was a little pond, and sitting right above it was my first kingfisher. Have a good day.
Thanks, Ruth, and thank you all of you who spent some time and sent us a message, a comment, or a question. We appreciate hearing from you. And, of course, if you have other notes or comments you'd like to send along, please get in touch with us.
You're listening to Phenology Plus on KAXE, Community Radio for Northern Minnesota, 91.7 on the Iron Range, Onagum, and Outing, 89.9 in the Brainerd area, 105.3 in Bemidji, audio streaming on the internet at kaxe.org. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. And coming up, Kathy Dodge and I check in with DNR wildlife biologist Pam Perry. Pam was out last weekend checking out the waterfowl migration. Plus, we'll take a little side trip with Pam and talk about gulls. And a talk on the wild side with John and Harry, plus our annual report on the exploding maple trees of Vermont. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members and by the Bonner Eye Clinic in Grand Rapids. For over 45 years, the Bonner Eye Clinic has served the eye care needs of Grand Rapids, Itasca County, and the Iron Range, providing full-service ophthalmology, cataract and LASIK refractive surgery, plus eye exams for glasses and contacts. And we have support from Atchison Tire Company in Grand Rapids, locally owned for more than 90 years. Atchison Tire has offered new tires and repair service for generations of their customers online at atchisontire.com. Time now for a talk on the wild side with John Latimer and Harry Hutchins. And Harry is a forest ecologist. He teaches in the forestry program at Itasca Community College. And in this conversation, Harry and John talk more about sparrows and other spring migrating birds and listen for the song sparrow that joins the program.
This is sparrow heaven right now. So in the last, you can tell when the sparrows are all done kind of going through because you start getting a Harris sparrow, but that won't be until May. Although people like John are getting these early things like seeing a broadwing hawk this early, that's usually kind of, my early date is usually like April 22nd.
Yeah.
Average. There's a couple things to think about when you're looking for birds this time of year. If you're not looking on the ground because you put out a bunch of millet, that's where all the sparrows are. Song sparrows are singing, the chipping sparrows are starting to sing. The large fox sparrows are singing, and they'll be gone soon. I think they're just hanging around because the weather hasn't been much.
Because
much
everything
worth
north of here
for.
Is yeah, everything north of here is worse than here.
Yeah. And what we do have though are yellow-rumped warblers. Steve Wilson saw one of those up in Finland. I showed the class some in my yard last Thursday, and this one that I was watching was following around where the sapsucker had gone and drinking sap and trying to find insects on the red maple where the sap was dripping out of. So that was, yeah, that's where it's getting its food.
Clever.
And the two plants to look at right now, you said, John, I heard you say that shrub that nobody likes to get their eye poked out with, though, has got some purple flowers on it?
Yes, it does. The hazel.
So make sure you take a look at that. But the one that really attracts the birds right now are the aspen catkins, because you're going to see little insects flying around those. So those early birds moving back to try and find insects are going to go after that and the red maple.
Yeah.
And those are the only two that are really attracting insects, and that's attracting birds.
Right. And speaking of the red maple, that's usually where I see my yellow-rumped warblers, that once they begin to flower, those warblers are there hawking the insects off of the flowers really steadily. And by the way, I announced earlier, but if you're just tuning in, if you have a red maple in your yard, if you're within the sound of my voice, or even if you're taking this on the internet, go out, take a picture of your red maple, take a picture of the whole tree, and then take a picture of the buds, close-up of the buds, and send it to me at jlatimer@kaxe.org. I'd like you to do that today. We're hoping to get pictures from around the state of the red maple, and we're going to kind of compare the pictures. We'll have them up on our website in another couple of days.
Would it be good if they put a date stamp on it?
That would be perfect.
And most cameras can do that.
Right, and a location would be even better. Oh, ouch. There, what's that, song sparrow? Bird just struck the window, and it's sitting there sort of panting.
They're bringing the bird in now.
Would you like to say anything about the song sparrow?
Well, it's
since
singing,
he's sitting here on my finger?
It might have hurt its wing. It hit pretty hard, and I would guess that it may have some internal injuries. It's obviously got his beak open. He's breathing pretty hard, and must be in some pretty good shock right now. So I don't know. You know, it's a tough thing to...
I guess for those people who maybe don't know what song sparrows look like, maybe you could give a little brief description.
Song sparrows tend to have a streaking not nearly as heavy as you see with the fox sparrow. They can be confusing. They're about 5 inches. The fox sparrow is about 7 inches. So when you see them together, they're very obvious differences. And the fox sparrow, of course, has that strong, rusty tail with the heavy streaking, whereas the song sparrow does not have a real contrast to the body color and the tail color. And I think this one might be heading to heaven here real quick. We'll see.
But Harry, I guess the thing that strikes me is that there are no wing bars. It's very, very plain. The back is slightly mottled with darker brown, kind of gray, and then lighter brown. Sort of a gray, I think you would call it maybe in the malars area, just below the eye and behind, and just above the eye, slightly gray with a brown streak that kind of goes back from the eye, and a brown cap, and dark brown. They might almost even look black, those two marks right below the chin. If you were looking from a distance, you might suspect that they were black, but then at this range, at a foot, you can see that they're dark brown.
I agree.
I disagree, Harry. I think this guy's going to recover. I have hopes.
You're an optimist.
I'm an optimist. I see the glasses half full, and he's got his head above water.
Well, my thoughts are with him. I hope he heads back outside and gets to do some more flying and singing. But when I walked into the studio, they were singing along with the purple finch and a fox sparrow and a lot of trilling from the juncos that are so abundant right now.
Harry Hutchins is a forest ecologist, and he joins John Latimer each week for a talk on the wild side. And coming up next, wildlife biologist Pam Perry has more on those juncos and sparrows and tells us about migrating waterfowl. Pam Perry helps us follow the changing seasons and the different things happening in our wild world. Pam's an on-game wildlife biologist with the DNR, and we talk with her each month about some of the things she's noticing as the seasons change. Oh, so slowly they change, Pam?
Yes, very slowly, and it was snowing again this morning here, so in Brainerd.
Well, you were out waterfowling this weekend. What'd you see?
Yeah, we had a field trip for the local bird club, which is called the Bee Nation Council. And we have members in Crow Wing and Aiken County. And we had about 18 hardy souls that showed up on Saturday morning. We met at the roadside restaurant just east of the one stoplight in Aiken County. I guess just for a total overall, we had 66 species for the day. Now that's quite a few, even for a cold day, and we did start in the snow and there was a little bit of wind and all that, but there were good numbers of waterfowl around the Aiken area, so it was still fun getting out even when the weather isn't totally cooperating with you.
Any surprises in terms of things you saw?
Well, I wouldn't say there were that many surprises in the kinds of species. I'd say one of our, we went west of Aiken first into what we call the Cedar Brook area, and there was some nice flooded fields there, and the Mississippi sort of loops around with some oxbows, and there's just some nice areas there to see waterfowl. And we did see a nice variety of like blue-winged teal, green-winged teal, gadwalls, widgeons, buffleheads, ring-necked ducks. We even found some shovelers. And, of course, the regulars like mallards and wood ducks and ring-necked ducks, you know, some of the more common ones. But when we went north of Aiken up to some areas that are regular, I mean, I've been doing this trip for, 20 years or better in the spring where we go out and look at waterfowl, then there's some very nice wild rice paddies up that way on Highway 1 north of Aiken. And they weren't flooded, and so there were no birds in there. And I'd say that was kind of a disappointment for that part of the trip, because usually we'll see very large numbers of tundra swans in there. We saw a few swans in the distance, but we couldn't get into any of the real big flocks, so they've moved on to somewhere else. And that was a little disappointing. But as I said at the beginning, we still had a very nice variety of species for the whole day.
Now, when you say the tundra swans have moved on, do you mean they've gone further north?
I expect so, or somewhere else. They're following the ice outs of the lakes. As that ice is melting and retreating, that's why this is such a great time of year to see waterfall, is that these birds come in, and as the ponds and the fields flood a little bit, you get birds moving into those areas, and they're waiting for the lakes to all open up, and then they keep moving north as that happens. But when they're congregated, they kind of, and if you have a late spring, sometimes there's more ice further north, and they just sort of get stacked up in an area, and you can see some wonderful concentrations then, even though the rivers are open. But a lot of these birds, the dabblers, and a lot of the concentrations of swans and ducks, they really like the quieter water of either ponds or shallow flooded areas, because they warm up so quickly, and then there's food in there for them. And there's more food, it's just warmer than in the bigger water areas. And, of course, those are still a lot iced up.
Mm-hmm. Last month you told us about this great little website you could go to and track the migration of loons. And that was fun for a couple of weeks as we watched a couple of loons that had been radio-collared work their way from, I think, the west coast of Florida back up to Minnesota through Michigan. And now, of course, in the last week or two, we've had reports of a lot of loons on our waters. So you getting the same information?
Yeah, I am. And we did see a couple loons on Saturday. And I even on my computer this morning when I came into work, there was a couple emails that I saw already that said, they're back. They survived the oil spill. Our loons are back.
And that is, do we have any indication that they were in an oil spill at all? Has anyone noticed anything different about the loons?
Not yet. And that's my answer for now, is that, I mean, of course, the oil spill was there, and we know the young loons were down there through that oil spill a year ago, because our loons stay down there for 2 years, you know, after they first migrate, before they come back. And we know there's still dispersants. We know there's still stuff in the water down there. We just didn't know how much of an effect it would have. But we're going to be looking very closely at the numbers of loons up here this summer. We have our loon monitoring program that occurs in early July, where people go out to index areas and actually count loons. And we'll be looking at those numbers very, very closely. We're also going to be looking at any carcasses of dead loons that we get and doing some tissue analysis, looking for chemicals that would indicate they were in that area or that something that they picked up might have affected them. So the answer is we don't know yet what effect. We're hoping it's minimal, but we have several things in place to monitor and look at what's going on with loons in Minnesota.
You know, Pam, we don't talk much about gulls. The kids have reported the returns of gulls, for example, up on Silver Lake in Virginia, which opens up early because of the power plant next to it. But where do the gulls go in the winter? I assume they go down to the Gulf or somewhere to warm waters. But is there any timing of their return?
Yeah, they come back early. We've had gulls back here in the Brainerd area now for a couple of weeks. And I know I was getting reports from up on Pelican Lake, which is near north of Brainerd here, large lake, and it's got a large nesting gull colony. And that's where the birds go back to. First, they seemed to show up. I was amazed. The lake was still quite frozen, and the gulls were already showing up and, I think, trying to claim some of their nesting spots on the island. So they go down to southern U.S. They can be along the shorelines. They can be out in fields. Ring-billed gulls are quite adaptable. And, no, we don't talk about them very often. They're not one of those real charismatic species. They're one of those that sometimes people get very annoyed with because they come in such numbers on their docks or
do this or that, but you know, certainly they're a part of the Lake Country and the North Country up here, very much so.
Yeah, they belong here. They're not.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Now Marshall Helberger had an interesting, a really nice picture of a colony of gulls on a rock. It was a rock island in the middle of a lake up near in the Lake Vermilion area. So they do nest in areas like that on the ground.
Yeah. They nest in the ground in colonies, often very very close to each other. And the colony on Pelican Lake is on Gooseberry Island, and there's a couple hundred, mm-hmm. at least, nesting pairs there.
What do they eat?
Of course, they eat fish. They'll eat a lot of aquatic invertebrates as well. But we do also think of them as scavengers. Sometimes mm-hmm. the first gulls I've seen are around the McDonald's here in Brainerd. And I know they'll eat insects. I've seen them in the parking lots picking bugs off of car grills when there's hatch outs of a lot of insects. And they have a versatile diet. Fish is number one.
They're not a diving bird, though, are they?
No, they're more of a scavenging, pick stuff off the surface or close to the surface.
Scott, you just mentioned we've never talked about gulls. Do they enjoy a poor reputation because of their French fry scavenging? Are they sort of the least interesting for people, or are there any gull lovers out there?
That's a great question, and I don't know. Yeah, their reputation is a little bit, because of their scavenging habits mm-hmm. and going through garbage and being in parking lots and doing those things, but you have to give them credit because they're so successful. They really are very, very adaptable and successful species, especially the ring-billed gull. The other problem is that they do whitewash things a lot.
Yes.
And when you get a lot of gulls in an area like we'll stop in Garrison at the Overlook there sometimes when we're out birding or out by Mille Lacs Lake, and sometimes the whole walls are just covered with white.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens on people's docks as well. So I think that also affects mm-hmm. their reputation to some degree.
We're speaking with Pam Perry, non-game wildlife biologist with the DNR. She joins us every month from the Brainerd area.
You know, there were a couple other things I wanted to mention, just going back to the field trip that we saw there, that I think were interesting. We did look at a great horned owl nest, and not everyone gets to see those or find them. And we had one we could view from the highway north of Aiken there. That was really quite nice. You could see the owl's head sticking up over the top of the nest. And they should have little ones in there now because they're an early nester, so they're there. And then also a couple of people in our vehicle saw a wolf chasing some deer, and that was in northern Aiken County towards Palisade. And they first noticed the deer that were running and kind of running very quickly away with their tails up, and then saw the wolf chasing them. The other thing we saw also were quite a few, in a couple different locations, magpies, black-billed magpies, which are always an exciting and showy species to see.
Let's go off the water now. It seems like the birds, the migrating birds coming back, juncos and sparrows, they're not deterred at all by this cool spring.
No, they're still on their regular schedule. What is happening right now, though, is because we've had these north winds for a couple days, is that they're kind of staying put for a while. And what I've noticed in our backyard is we have huge flocks of juncos all over our property. And we also have a lot of fox sparrows. And the fox sparrows are a beautiful bird. And a lot of people go, oh, sparrows, they all look alike. Well, this one is the size of a thrush, has a grayish head, and then rufous coloring on the tail and down the back with lots of streaks. Beautiful, big sparrow. And we had over 30 of them in our backyard last night. And so that's pretty significant. And what's going to happen, though, is as soon as the winds shift and we start getting some southerly breezes, then we're going to start getting influx of different species again. So it's just like the migration stalls a little bit when we get these north winds. Everything hunkers down for a couple, few days, whatever it takes. Then it's going to move on again, and we'll start getting more migrants in.
Well, Pam, we're going to be visiting with you in about a month, and between now and then, a lot's going to change, assuming it warms up, I guess. What are you anticipating, say, over the next month?
Oh, May is just the big month for lots of things happening. I mean, because so many of the birds, we're going to have the insect birds return, insect-eating birds returning, which will be the warblers. Right now we have yellow-rumped warblers in the area, but there will be a whole bunch coming in. Orioles, hummingbirds, scarlet tanagers. The birds will be coming back from the tropics, the flycatchers, all different kinds of those. We'll have the purple martins, the chimney swifts, night hawks. They're all going to be coming back between now and then. So great time of year.
Pam Perry is a wildlife biologist with the DNR. She's based in Brainerd, and we check in with Pam each month to talk about wildlife and the wildlife project she's working on. Finally, tonight on Phenology Plus, it's time for our annual report on the exploding maple trees of Vermont. Due to the low-carb diet trend, there's been a big drop in demand for maple syrup, but as National Public Radio's Robert Siegel found out, Vermont syrup producers still have to risk their lives each spring to tap those trees.
Long, lingering shadows skate across the frozen woods. Spring belies the calendar here. It won't shine on these northern forests for weeks to come. The days are getting longer, but for Vermont maple sap farmers, there are trees to tap before they sleep. Even with demand for maple syrup at an all-time low, some farmers still release the sap that has built up over the winter. They're the prudent ones. While most of the nation savors its golden pancake topping as a treat, up in New England, that end product is just part of the story.
All right there, Harvey. Open the valve. She's arising.
Got it here. Got it. Move back there.
The Grisham family lives on 100 acres of prime maple sapland. The farm hides in a grove of trees that have stood here since King George granted a Grisham ancestor rights to the land in 1773. The family has been tapping trees and boiling sap into syrup ever since here in North Fretford. But now, after production has declined by a steep 58%, the process is all the more precarious. An untapped tree is a time bomb ready to go off.
Watch it. Be careful there.
Untapped maple trees can explode like gushers, causing injury and sometimes death. If untended, quiet stands of nature's sweeteners can turn into spindly demons of destruction. The Vermont Health Board reports 87 fatalities, 140 maimings, and a dozen decapitations from sap buildup explosions this year. That's the highest ever.
The force of the sap coming up is just too much for the tree, and as the pressure mounts, you get what we call an arbor explosion. In layman's terms, the tree blows up.
Professor George Croft teaches arboreal thermodynamics at the University of Northeastern Central Vermont's southwestern campus. He says people these days discount the destructive power of an engorged maple, unlike earlier peoples of the area.
The Indians, of course, knew what the maple trees did, and the Indians used to bleed them all the time, but they never passed that on to the Puritans, who were utterly surprised and sometimes badly hurt. The Puritans, when they finally figured out that they needed to bleed the trees, they found out that the sap, the maple syrup, was sweet and therefore sinful,
which some theorists believe contributed to the decline of Puritanism in New England.
Take it slow there, Aunt.
The sweetness that millions have welcomed on the breakfast plate has turned here to a bitterness that pours sadness on the heart.
I better back off on that.
Ernest Tilly stands about 4'6". His sandpaper chin hangs like an anchor below a set of sad eyes set deep in a round face. A man of few words and fewer intelligible ones, Tilly stands over a project that he'd rather not be working on. It's a simple wooden coffin made of maple planks. It's for his son, Mackenzie, a quiet boy. He'd returned from college last month and was helping his father with chores, not realizing that the maples he had climbed as a child had reached and passed the tapping point.
Tried to tell him they shouldn't be out there in the woods like that, but he was stubborn. He was stubborn, and he also didn't know the potential of those trees.
The deadly blast of a maple tree explosion can be heard for 20 miles away, they say. These hills are natural amplifiers, and that resonance, rich as a symphony written in splinters, has captured the imagination of folklorists.
There is something sort of otherworldly about the sound of a maple exploding.
The Vermont Maple Museum collects rare recordings of forest explosions from the 1930s before modern tapping technology made most woodmen safe. The recordings are well known in Europe. Ned Lamont is curator.
Most of the recordings we have were actually collected by accident. There'd be people who'd be out recording woodchucks or deer or moose, and while they were making the recording, they would hear that eerie and beautiful sound of a maple tree just bursting apart. It was really, it's something you have to hear to understand.
The Vermont Maple Museum offers a journey into the state's past, complete with mementos of the 19th century, when every schoolchild learned the hard-won lessons of the woods. Vermonters have sung, written, and traded stories about the rigors of maple sap, all the while continuing to watch the industry that encourages tree tapping diminish. It has been hurt by a cheaper syrup knockoff from, of all places, the islands of the South Pacific. Here in Vanabos, formerly Danish Samoa, workers are making a cheaper maple syrup substitute. It's called table syrup. They saw apart used maple tables, chairs, knickknacks. The expense of importing these pieces of furniture halfway around the world is more than made up for by abundant cheap labor, by the lack of unions, health care, government oversight. In the past 4 years, the Vanabossian syrup industry has cut deep into Vermont's maple syrup market. Salomona Lanomiamata is 14 and the mother of two.
I am now taking the sawed-up maple tables and inserting the pieces into the big boiling vat you see here. It is a slow process. It takes 4 weeks for 100 cubic feet of maple wood to be boiled down to make 1 liter of syrup. It requires great patience. I used to sit on the beach all day eating coconut and strumming a ukulele, but this is much better life for me.
Salomona, back to work! And tell that actor doing your voice in English to get out of here! La, la, la,
la, la. Please don't shove me, I will do as you say. Please, I mean no harm, I speak Samoan, I'm just doing my job.
And so, only time will tell if the success of this remote Pacific Island rival to the Vermont maple syrup industry will wipe out the sugar houses of New England. Meanwhile, authorities are sifting through the shattered limbs and lives of the forests of the north, hoping, if at all possible, that time will tell. Robert Siegel, NPR News, Fretford, Vermont.
That's Phenology Plus for this week. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members and by the Itasca Surgical Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Itasca Surgical Clinic, patients are provided with personal screening, diagnosis, and treatment of a full range of medical conditions, all in a caring environment. We also have support from Dale's Auto Body of Grand Rapids. At Dale's Auto Body, customer satisfaction is based on 25 years of experience. The staff at Dale's is ready and willing to answer questions concerning the repair and estimating process. At Dale's Auto Body, repairs are vital to a vehicle's performance, safety, and resale value. Theme music for Phenology Plus is by Bella Fleck and the Flecktones. And Weather Report, I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. Thanks for listening.